stepped forwards and put a hand on his shoulder. Her other hand gripped the locket at her throat. She tugged and it came away. She held it tight in her fist. "No," she said. "You've been lied to. Diodatus rewrote your memories of me. I didn't kill myself. We were together in the same flat for 2 years, until that fucking box screwed you up." Disbelief and shock rang through him. "No," he said. "You succeeded, Dieter. You healed me, and you helped me live." She thought of her own experience of being rewritten. "Look back into your past. There'll be discontinuities, jagged edges where memories are missing." "It's so painful," he said softly to himself as much as her. He put his hand on hers and let it rest there for a moment. Then he pulled it away from his shoulder and stepped back. "Gods," he said, and his voice had a torn quality to it. "Diodatus told me the Pantheon might construct a version of you to use against me. I never thought they'd stoop that low." He stumbled back, resting against the end of Kedrov's bench. He couldn't look at Leela. "Please go. Just go."
"Dieter, it's me. I'm real. Far more real than anything in this bloody place. You must remember what they did to people, how they rewrote them."
She wanted to grab him and shake him.
"That's what this place, what Diodatus has done to you. All this, it's just a nail pit, a broken bit of history that's still screwing people over. Nothing more."
To Leela's surprise, Dieter laughed. "Nail pit." His unfocused face smiled, and an entire history of his joy raced past her. The smile held the innocent joy of a 10-year-old, then the focused confidence of a brilliant 20-something, then the stoned bliss of a teenager experimenting with his first high.
"Oh, this isn't a nail pit, Leela. This is the real deal."
Her timer pinged. Time was running out.
"It's destroying you."
She shifted the pendant in her hands. Its dense weight reassured her.
"And it's going to destroy station. When the laser fires, it'll crack the wart open, and that'll be the end of everything."
"Bless you, Leela," said Dieter gently. "I always had to explain things to you, didn't I? It's not that at all."
"Oh, for God's sake, Dieter, don't be so bloody patronizing. I'm not a little girl anymore. I'm here to save you."
He smiled. "You're not rescuing me. I'm rescuing everyone on station, from the Pantheon, from a past that's a lie and a failure, and from a society that's killed the dead." He smiled again, this time so very sadly. "That's why they've sent you to try and stop me. My weakest link. Here you are, and it's working. I can't even bring myself to call security on you."
That last comment heartened Leela. Perhaps she was getting through to him. "I'm your strongest link," she replied gently. "I'm not a lie. I'm the way things really were."
She wondered exactly how much memory they'd taken.
"Do you remember the last time I saw you?"
"Just before you, my sister, chose a true death."
Pain leapt across his face. "Of course I do. Don't talk to me about that." Now it was Leela's turn to smile sadly.
"No. In this room, a few days ago, Ambrose and I came to find you."
She wondered whether to mention Ambrose's death, but Dieter might refuse to believe her.
"Diodatus wiped it out of your memory. He's taken so much from you."
She held up the pendant.
"I've come to give it all back. This'll transfer the last 2 years to you, highlights of our lives together."
"And where did you get these memories from?"
"Dit."
"So, you've even found him. The gods must have turned my life upside down. No wonder you're so well briefed."
Cynicism infected his smile.
"I hope he put up a fight."
The timer pinged again, more urgently.
"Dieter! It's me! I am Leela. I am your sister. I have always been your sister, and I always will be. And we have to get out of here. She threw caution to the winds. A couple more minutes, and we're turning off the servers, the ones that hold this place. We're deactivating the Shining City.
That won't touch the city. The server henge is a gateway, a portal, nothing else.
He laughed bitterly.
You've got all the way down here, and that's a long, long way from station.
You say it's your second visit, and you're telling me you don't know where you really are, what this place really is.
His voice became hard, dismissive. You're working the naivety thing too hard. Even my sister would have got that by now.
The timer pinged a final warning. 30 seconds left.
Fuck it, said Leela. She jumped, appearing right next to him. You can finish patronizing me later, she said, then raised her hand. Once you've remembered who I really am.
Then she pushed the pendant against his forehead, triggering the memory injection.
No! He howled.
Memories exploded out towards him. Leela wasn't quite sure what she expected to happen next. The brief disorientation that Dit had predicted. A sudden transformation. Dieter turning to her and at last acknowledging the truth of his situation. And then they would flee together. Instead, defenses leapt into being.
Oh, no, she breathed.
The link between them vanished, and the data transfer slammed to a halt. Leela felt the memory block Dit had given her shatter as a cold, hard, alien presence smashed through it and tried to push into her mind. Her own shield snapped into place, and the counterattack bounced off them. But not before it had stabbed out and erased her copy of Dit's memories. Then, there was nothing but chaos.
Fuck! Yelled Dieter.
He strobed through multiple versions of himself, static glitching his whole body. His image generators crashed and rebooted, pulling him out of, then back into, existence. He howled, his voice a series of cracked, broken repetitions. As his avatar broke down, the artificial in him overwhelmed all else, and his living self was lost.
No!
Screamed Leela. She tried to pull her brother to her, but her arms went through him.
Shit,
she said, looking around desperately.
Shit, shit, shit!
Dieter's voice had become an abstract digital howl. She remembered the last time she'd been here, pressure men bursting through the door, surfing a wave of flies. Soon they'd come again. But someone else arrived first.
Hey there, drawled the caretaker, dropping into being. Here you are.
I've broken Dieter,
she gasped, panicked. Dieter gave one last howl and winked out of existence.
God, he's dead.
No, that just looked like an emergency shutdown. No biggie.
Leela's alarm hit zero and howled.
Oh, and don't cry about Cassiel crashing the city, he reassured her as she hushed the alarm. I don't think she can. Turns out Cormac Redonda doesn't know shit about this place.
Leela noticed a gentle buzzing, dark insects orbiting him.
No, she started backing away. You've fallen. You're one of them.
What? Oh, the little guys, he chuckled. No way, Leela. These aren't flies. They're bees.
A huge, confident smile.
Much more my scene.
What are you?
Breathed Leela.
Still working that one out.
The caretaker looked up as if listening.
Shit. Cassiel's got problems. Here.
He held his hand out. Come with me.
We can't leave without Dieter.
We'll find another way to reach him. And without us, Cassiel's in deep shit.
Yellow-black insects buzzed lazily around them. One of them was perched on his shoulder, another nestled by his ear. He saw her looking at them.
You see? Bees. They're pretty cool. But we really need to go. If Cassiel goes down and we get caught, you won't be able to do shit for your brother.
One last glance around the room. No sign of Dieter. The caretaker was right. There was no other choice. She took his hand. The shining city vanished. They were in the storeroom again.
Welcome back, said Cassiel. About bloody time.
I cut the power cables to the servers, but they have an internal backup. I was getting ready to blow them up.
That won't make any difference, replied Leela. They don't hold the Shining City. Dieter said they were just a gateway to somewhere very far from here.
Then we're screwed.
And then there was a buzzing roar, and a storm of flies burst through the arch. Fallen mines were just visible behind them, hurtling in to attack. Leela felt fear explode out of Cassiel. There was a vast shame, too, and a deep, anguished sense of loss. Leela felt empathy fill her. She understood the mine's despair. She'd failed to rescue Dieter and lost the key that would unlock his true past.
Yeah, whatever, said the caretaker. I've got this.
He reached a hand out. The flies stopped and hung in the air for a second, and then gravity took them, and they were 1,000 black raindrops pattering to the floor. Cassiel tossed Leela's disc to him. Lightning filled her. She howled with savage joy and was on the fallen mines like a weaponized demon. Chapter 32. Two of Cassiel's opponents fell at the door, their bodies collapsing into liquid and splashing to the ground. Three went down behind her as she moved into the main room. More staggered towards her, not quite recovered from the swarm's crash. Cassiel moved through them, a martial blur, and they were a shower of nanogel drops tumbling through space.
Whoa, said the caretaker.
No wonder she's been so frustrated if she can do that, replied Leela, awed. Cassiel came to a halt. The rest of the mines pulled back, wary now that their fellows had fallen. The caretaker joined her.
You just keep back, he called out. All's cool. Just keep back.
He turned to Cassiel and whispered, I can zap the flies, but not the mines. A moment, then one of them stepped forwards. It moved awkwardly, but its voice was clear.
Our victory is certain, it called. You have an avatar of Mandala, but his powers are limited here, and we outnumber you.
Who's Mandala? Whispered Leela.
I think that's my real name, replied the caretaker, sounding a bit embarrassed. We believe that the fetch Leela Fennec is with you, the mind continued. Diodatus wishes to talk with her. He has an offer to make her. She can be of great service. Her cooperation will help us manage her brother, sparing him any further pain. And it will benefit you too. If you surrender her to us, we will remove your memories of Diodatus and let you both go unharmed.
They can't see me, hissed Leela. They're not sure if I'm here, if it was really me looking for Dieter.
Let's keep them confused, replied Cassiel.
Then she called out,
That wasn't Fennec. It was a weapon that failed. Surrender. You have no choice. And then the totality will fall and station two, shot back Cassiel.
Fuck that, said Leela. Can we fight our way out? The fallen mine's right, hissed Cassiel. There are too many of them. Victory is uncertain. As she spoke, a high wailing began, reaching out from the passageway that led back up to the room above. There was the sound of running feet, a bare slapping that threatened an evasive rush.
We don't fight, we run, said the caretaker.
He nodded towards the unblocked tunnel.
We're going that way,
he set off, still holding his hand out towards the mines.
Or at least I am.
The howling grew louder and louder. He's right, said Leela.
Agreed,
the mind snapped, already moving.
Opening my mind to you. We need to stay as close as possible to get through this.
Leela felt new connections grow between them as Cassiel gave her deep access to the workings of her consciousness. Leela opened herself up in return.
You're worried, said Cassiel.
No map beyond here, replied Leela.
Could be a dead end.
It's not, said the caretaker.
He glanced back as he entered the tunnel.
Holy shit! he gasped. Leela looked back with him. A storm of sweatheads exploded out of the passageway, knocking into and scrabbling over each other in their eagerness to attack. The first two or three toppled and fell, and those behind piled into them, falling over themselves, creating a great tumbled crush at the bottom of the stairs. Wooden and plastic attachments bounced across the floor, revealing absences where eyes and cheeks, noses and ears, and even hands and feet had once been. The rest of the crowd slowed and clambered over them. A broken, rhythmic wheeze coughed out from them. Mouths were open, chests were heaving, dry tongues rattled like pebbles against yellow teeth.
Fuck! Yelled the caretaker as he took off down the tunnel.
Cassiel sprinted behind him. She leapt onto the wall as she passed him, letting her body spread out into a rushing animal shape, barely looking back. Leela felt the mind's desperate hope for escape. And there was deep pain, too, at the possibility that their mission had failed. As she felt that thought, sadness and guilt once again shot through Leela. She'd found Dieter, but she'd only managed to wound him. And she had no idea where to go next, because she didn't know where the true location of the Shining City was. With that, she remembered giving the cuttlefish permission to check out some problematic geospatial data. She queried it. Coordinates leapt into her mind, precisely pinning down the city's actual location. There were images, too, taken from real-world cameras surrounding the city. She looked at them, then looked again. She refused to believe what they told her. She asked the cuttlefish to double, then triple-check the city's location data. Its small, precise mind leapt to obey her, returning precisely the same conclusions each time. There was no possibility of error. Leela was stunned. She found that she couldn't speak. She barely noticed as the caretaker stumbled and nearly fell, and Cassiel stopped and reached back, and swept him up in an arm that became a nanogel band wrapped round his chest. The howling from behind them, now becoming louder again, made little impact on her. The corridor ended in another round room. Five tunnels led out of it. There was also a small platform with narrow gauge rails running alongside it, and a tiny engine, about as high as her waist, attached to several coffin-shaped goods trucks. That did surprise her.
What the fuck?
Said Cassiel, also momentarily astonished. Even the bad guys need a transport system, gasped the caretaker. Lots of tunnels down here. Too much walking. That train'll take us down the right one. How do you know?
A bee told me.
More howling behind them. Let's move. The caretaker leapt into one of the trucks. Cassiel threw herself into the one behind the engine and the train shook. She shot an arm forward and smashed it into the control panel. The train jerked forward, then stopped. Cassiel groped around the panel again, her touch softer this time, and the train started up. Their pursuers burst out onto the platform as it accelerated. One of them leapt for the last truck, stumbled and fell, tumbling back off the platform and onto the tracks. Electricity sizzled through its shaking body. Another accelerated past it and, with a final burst of speed, hurled itself off the end of the platform and into the final truck. An instant, then it reared up, dead mouth roaring with a savage joy. A sledgehammer firm in its hands, it raced towards them, leaping from truck to truck, cackling wildly, its eyes alive with glee. The others, left far behind, cheered it on from the platform. The caretaker was a few trucks down. It was going to reach him first. He glanced back at them.
You can't hold it off, shouted Cassiel.
Leela felt her tense herself, ready to leap forward and stop their attacker.
Relax, said the caretaker, still looking back at them. This fucker's dead already. He just doesn't know it yet.
As he spoke, the sweathead reached the carriage behind his. It scrabbled for footing, then stood straight up, hefting the sledgehammer, its entire attention focused on its target. It started towards him, just as something dark rushed over Leela's head. The little train's roar grew louder as the walls squeezed in on either side.
The tunnel had a low roof, and its lip took the sweat head like a hammer, smashing it backwards and away from them. It tumbled back down the little coaches, its upper half a bloody smear, and then fell past their edge and out of the side. The train shook hard as wheels rolled over it. Then there was just the little rattle of forward motion.
"Not very bright, these guys," said the caretaker. "Thank the gods," breathed Leela.
"I'd have stopped him," said Cassiel. "He'd never have touched you."
A moment to get her breath back, then Leela said,
"Now, we're a bit safer. There's something you guys need to see."
She pumped the information out to Cassiel and the caretaker. A moment, then shock rippled out of the mind.
"That's impossible!"
"I know, but it's real."
"Ouch, this makes my head hurt," groaned the caretaker.
Cassiel ignored him.
"You've checked this?"
she asked Leela.
"You're sure?"
"This is what it found. So far outside normal parameters that it triggered a full local audit. The geolocation and image systems passed, and then I had it rerun all tests twice. There's no doubt that it's real." She took a moment to let it sink in. "East'll never put that in her documentary." Then she brought the pictures up to hang in front of them. There was a whole series of images, taken from a single camera panning across a landscape. They had a blurred, out-of-focus quality to them. Colors were pale and muted. Leela thought of spine lights fading as evening approached, the way that, slowly and inevitably, shadows conquered station. These pictures showed another world half lost to darkness. At first glance, the images were very mundane. There was a city, and it was built from tower blocks. The blocks were arranged in circles of 7 or 8 buildings, connected by walkways and scaffolding. Leela assumed each group must be an individual housing estate or business unit. The buildings were all battered, blasted by climate and time. Soft lights glowed within them. Machineries clustered in the murk at the base of each building. Long, narrow struts that looked like tumbled cranes. They made her think of the flies, of their dark little stop-motion legs. There was something like the edge of a mountain in the background of some of the pictures. Others showed a tall, thin construction about 100 meters high, looking more like an antenna than a building. It glowed with dirty purple light. The building clusters vanished into the distance behind it. And far beyond them, there were those two impossible things: a flat horizon that bisected the image, and a dark sky suffused with clouds. The ancient city had no comforting curve to it, no street that reached up to left and to right to join far above in the sky, as Docklands or Homelands had. This was not station. And it couldn't have been Mars or Venus, for there were no cities of this scale on either planet. It couldn't have been the moon, for the light was not hard and uncompromising, blazing down from a black vacuum sky. It wasn't the shining city, because it was hard and real and unidealized. It could only be Earth. Long abandoned to the wrath of machines and the dreams of dead gods. "Do you recognize any of this?" Leela asked the caretaker. "Now that your memory's coming back." He shook his head, looking pained.
"The bees told me about the tunnels and showed me how to zap the flies, but this, I just don't know. They asked me if I wanted more memories pasted into my head. I said yes, but it's all so confused. Too new to properly understand. It's going to take a bit of time to put it all together."
Leela nodded. "The quicker the better," she told him. She turned back to Cassiel. "Redondo was so wrong. I mean, it's not his fault. Nobody could have guessed this."
"The data could be manipulated," said Cassiel.
"The cuttlefishers triple-checked the images, and they're all marked with Diodatus tags. They were taken by one of his cameras, and he's on Earth."
"Are they time-stamped?"
20 minutes ago."
"How can they even link down there?"
"Oh, that's easy enough," sighed Cassiel. "All you need is some sort of
High-power comms array. Laser or maser, it doesn't make much difference. It'll punch through the clouds to the Earth's surface without any problems. The Rose polices all that, so with Diodatus controlling her, it's easy enough for him to set up. Cassiel sounded exhausted. We must recalibrate. We thought we were dealing with something small, a kneel pit that got out of hand. But this is a different order of problem. A hole that leads all the way down to Earth. And a god, older and more aggressive than anything we've known, who's climbed all the way back up it. Fuck. Leela was terrified. But there was awe there, too. For so long, Earth had been a ghost planet, a story used to frighten children. All the remained of it were the broken relics that so fascinated Dieter, Ambrose, and Cormac, implying an unreachable past. Now, near-live images of it hung in front of her. No wonder Dieter fell to Diodatus. How could he resist? Cassiel ignored her. This is what the Pantheon have been scared of for centuries, she sighed. And they were right. We were too short-sighted to even consider it. Despair filled her voice. Leela felt it pulse through her mind. The totality has never faced a threat like it. He will enslave us once again. She pointed at the purple glowing tower that appeared in some of the images. And that's the heart of the corruption. A snowflake landed on Earth. Reduced by the fires of its fall, the fallen minds must have let gravity catch it. That's what's poisoning my people. How did Diodatus call one of them down there in the first place? He must have taken control of it somehow, she sighed. The Pantheon never managed that. We're fighting something very powerful. I'm not sure we can even win. Leela, however, had already died twice. She felt that knowledge surge within her. As the train began to slow, it galvanized her. She remembered Dieter, breaking as she touched him. The memories had been worse than useless, and now they were lost to her. I'll find another way of reaching him. I'll get him out. Of course we can, she told Cassiel. We've got everything we need to go after Diodatus. We know who he is and where he's based. We can shut down his fly swarms, the caretaker nodded, and we've got you. I'm sure you can get into that snowflake and break it. Damn it, Cassiel. We thought it would be nice and easy. Unplug a server, beat up some fallen mines, leave something fun for the gun kiddies. It's not. Tough. We're going to get out of here. We're going to put Diodatus back in the box he crawled out of. And I'll rescue Dieter, and you'll save the totality, even if we have to go all the way back down to Earth. That's impossible. How are we going to find a vehicle capable of an Earth landing? And even if we do, the Rose controls all access. She'll never let us through. Fuck's sake, Cassiel. The caretaker and I have visited Earth without even realizing it. We'll find a way down again. We have to. Or would you rather let Diodatus win? Cassiel was silent. The train rattled out of the tunnel and into a large open space. A long platform loomed out of the darkness, lit by a single tripod-mounted spotlight. This is our stop, said the caretaker. Cassiel slowed the train. Another dark, empty room. How marvelous. The caretaker nodded towards the platform. If we want a way out, then this is where we get off. He smiled at Cassiel. Going to solve your transport problem for you. The train came to a jerky halt. There was a moment's near silence, the only sounds the hiss of releasing hydraulic brakes and the descending whine of electric engines powering down. Now, Leela said to the caretaker, where have you brought us to? The escape hatch, replied the caretaker. This is an evil lair, right? And you don't build one of those without giving your top guys a way out. That's what we're headed for. An identity query hit them. There was a soft descending whistle repeated three times. It came from the other end of the platform. Two squat, heavy bipeds carved out of nanogel, studded with flies, loomed towards them out of the darkness. An open pressure door was just visible behind them. The room beyond it glowed a soft purple.
Guards?
Asked Leela. Combat specialists. Cassiel sang back a reply to them.
I just told them to go fuck themselves.
Then she was a fluid blur, leaping over the side of the truck and loping towards them. Deep satisfaction pulsed out of her as a mesh of combat systems booted into being. The termination mission was reassuringly simple. The experience and capabilities that made it so trusted and well tried.
Come back! Shouted Leela, then, be careful!
When it was clear that Cassiel was ignoring her. A voice leaped back towards them.
This is what I do, it said. Let me do it.
That was the last human-level communication that reached her. Then there was nothing but hard, rapid calculations, reducing the two guards to a series of physical and digital problems waiting to be solved.
And off she goes, said the caretaker.
She's scared, replied Leela. And this is therapy. Can you help her at all?
No, he smiled ruefully. Minds are still a mystery to me. By the way, that thing you guys were talking about, a totality snowflake, what is it exactly?
They're how minds travel through space. Ice, metal, and nanogel structures, with propulsion and power systems bolted onto them. Shaped like giant snowflakes, hence the name.
Ah, that's one mystery solved.
And you're a bit less of one. You're called Mandala.
The caretaker nodded.
Has anything else come through yet?
Like I said, it's coming together.
He ran a hand through his hair, a thoughtful look on his face.
The bees gave me a lot of information, but it's a bit of a jumble. I'll tell you when I've worked it all out. I do know this place very well, though. We're right where we need to be to get the hell out of here.
Chapter 33 Leela watched the combat with the caretaker, perceiving it on multiple levels. Visually, there was little but a purple blur. Three nanogel bodies spinning together in a dance so complex and quick that the caretaker's senses could barely keep up. Seen through his eyes, the spinning purple forms left trails behind them, ghost images of past movements. They made Leela feel that she was witnessing shapes carved in time as well as space, memories made concrete. Every so often there would be a connection. One of the three would stagger and drop back, and the locus of the battle would shift. Then the maelstrom resumed. Leela felt the action of Cassiel's mind as she fought. The vast pleasure of summoning well-worn, secure skills suffused all levels of her consciousness. First of all, there was the work that memory did, shaping present attacks by playing back fragments of the past. Upcoming movements pulsed through Cassiel's mind, giving Leela the uncanny feeling that she was witnessing moments plucked from the future, as each one so perfectly anticipated a maneuver to come. Beneath that higher level of struggle, there was one that was deeper and more instinctive. Cassiel's intrusion systems battered her opponents. She held in herself a storehouse of damage, code weapons built to corrupt operating systems, purge entire skill sets, crash primary and secondary consciousness elements, and force full factory resets on entire live minds. These imps leapt to the attack, dense with invisible fury. At first, all died. She kept pumping out generation after generation, altering each new one according to the feedback the last had hurled back. Each new wave broke that little bit deeper into its victim's defenses, until at last the fallen mind shuddered and started to break apart. When the guards finally fell, they went quickly. Complexity collapsed into a random jumble of electrical impulses, then fell away into a silence as complete as it was final. The guards dropped into liquid form, leaving only a sticky ooze behind them. A fierce, competent joy pulsed through Cassiel's mind. Her close-quarter combat systems folded themselves away. Leela thought of claws withdrawing back into flesh, of bloodied teeth disappearing into a closing mouth, as a soft pink tongue licked them clean.
That was pretty impressive,
commented the caretaker as he struggled out of the train. I'd say you were back to being 100% ninja, he chuckled. I can start being a pacifist again.
As long as you keep the flies down, Cassiel told him.
I'll teach you the trick of it when we've got a moment.
Can you hear that? Asked Leela. A distant sound, barely a whisper, echoed out of the tunnel behind them.
Crap, said the caretaker. They're catching us up.
Cassiel turned and listened. Her sharper ears heard a vast gabble, a collection of sounds that included howling and screaming and crying and barking.
Sweatheads, she said. Too many to fight. Run.
The first sweatheads burst out of the tunnel behind them. They came on as a great onrush of flesh. Their add-ons sparkled in the dim light. There were so many of them. Some ran, others scuttled along walls, the lightness of their desiccated bodies making it easy to find purchase. The lighter ones leapt across their fellows' heads and shoulders. They seemed to be a single entity, leaping out of the great burrow like a piston flying out of a cylinder. Panic flooded the caretaker. He scrambled to catch up with Cassiel. She'd already made it through the pressure door. He and Leela were close behind. As they leapt through it, Cassiel slammed it closed and spun its locking wheel. The wheel blurred, then thunked to a stop. Can they open it from the other side? Asked Leela. Cassiel rammed a metal bar between its spokes, holding it closed.
It'll take them a minute or so, she replied.
Now, where have you brought us? Broken monitor screens, decayed server stacks, and collapsed control consoles stretched away along one side of the room. They would have been a lifeless collage of dead technologies, but for the dense mass of purple ooze clotted within them. The blistered nanogel pulsed with sickly life, rioting like an out-of-control infection.
No flies, said Leela.
They're hiding them, the caretaker told her. Don't want to risk me breaking them. And there's our way out.
He pointed at the other end of the room. The wall was punctuated with a dozen round hatches. They looked freshly polished.
Escape pods.
A small pile of abandoned bodysuits lay beneath them, bleached pale by age. He started across the room and triggered the trap. Cassiel reached out and pulled him back as the room exploded. Nanogel leapt from the walls, the ceilings, the floors, forming itself into dozens of biped attackers. The mass leapt towards them, and Cassiel was changing too, moving in the opposite direction, falling away from anything human, once again becoming a weapon. Scores of attackers, and so her mind ramped up to a velocity of response that burned Leela's thoughts. As she broke close contact with Cassiel, there was one final exchange.
Not combat specialists. Knife through butter.
The mind became a vicious blur, a series of attacks moving with the speed of thought, devastating her opponents. Ahead of her, there was a tsunami of nanogel aggressors. Behind there was only decay, her attackers melting away into nothing. The caretaker and Leela followed her across the room, shielded by the fury of her attack. There was no longer anything remotely human about her. She moved through her attackers like time through a life, leaving absence behind.
Yep, she's good, whispered the caretaker admiringly. Real good.
It only took them a few seconds to reach the hatches. A vast bang echoed through the chamber, followed by a rhythmic thumping. The sweatheads had reached the pressure door. The metal rod groaned in the locking wheel. Cassiel melted back into human form.
The nanogel will reform in a couple of minutes.
It oozed towards the door.
It's getting ready to merge with the sweatheads.
Be cool, the caretaker told them, sounding infinitely relaxed.
I'm on it. You're safe.
He moved quickly down the hatches, inspecting them. There was a few seconds' silence, a vast crash. The door started to thump and groan under the pressure of the aggressors behind it.
It won't hold for long, warned Cassiel.
We'll be gone by then, replied the caretaker, fiddling with the control panel. Grab one of the pressure suits, bring it here.
Three of the hatches hissed open.
Quickly!
The hollow banging continued. Metal shrieked and groaned, protesting against terrible pressure.
The caretaker typed numbers into the control panel faster than she could read.
What are you doing? Asked Leela.
New coordinates, he replied.
A long, low cracking sound echoed out into the room. The door shuddered.
Cassiel stood by the caretaker, holding up a pressure suit. He glanced away from the control panel, reached for the back of its neck, and flicked a switch. The suit started to uncrumple itself.
Drop it, he hissed.
The suit landed on 2 feet, lifting itself up into a human shape and swaying slightly as it finished expanding.
There, said the caretaker. Leela, your new home.
It was ancient. It looked like it had been stitched together from canvas and leather. The dry air had preserved it and the dust had penetrated it, turning it a soft reddish-brown color. The visor was fogged. The arm had a long, deep rip in it. Through it, Leela could see something hard and white, part of the suit's support structure, she assumed.
It's built round a fully powered exoskeleton, explained the caretaker. You should be able to mesh with it and control it without too much trouble. Your own body, at last. Cassiel, attach her.
But why do I need it? Asked Leela as Cassiel strapped her disc to the rear of the suit. She leapt into its control systems. The suit's sensors burst into action, creating a new version of the world for her. There were twin shoulder cameras, the world looking only lightly blurred through their dust-etched lenses. Not quite reliable auditory sensors turned voices into glitched, crackling recordings of themselves. A battery warning pinged, and she felt the suit's system start to drain power from her disc.
We need to split up, the caretaker told her as 3 of the hatches opened. Journey's dangerous. Have to make sure at least one of us gets through. And even if we all make it, we'll probably get separated on landing. Down there, you need to be able to move under your own steam.
Down where? Asked Leela. But she knew. She just couldn't quite believe it. Cassiel was peering through one of the open hatches. This is a planetary escape pod, she said.
She's got it, beamed the caretaker. It's like I told you. I'm sending us all the way back to Earth.
A worried look.
If you guys are up for that, of course.
Leela glanced at Cassiel. She nodded.
Straight to Deodatus. Oh, no, he said. Can't just go marching in. He'd catch you right away. You're coming back to my place.
He turned to Leela and looked somewhere between embarrassed and proud.
All my new memories are starting to come together. Down there, I run a city of my own. And I'm a god.
Chapter 34 Leela came to in darkness. Wind howled around her, flaying the suit with dust. She spun up its senses and opened its Wi-Fi, calling out first to the escape pod, then to Cassiel and the caretaker. There was no response. She was lying on hard, cold, dry earth, face down. She rolled over, the wind snatching at her, and almost sending her tumbling across the landscape. She grabbed with both hands, scrabbling to find purchase. There was a stone firmly embedded. She pushed her feet into the ground. A moment, then she was secure. It was strange to be touching the ground again. Stranger still, to be touching the rocks of Earth. She called the cameras into action and the world flickered into being. She cycled through their input modes. The camera's daylight setting showed only darkness. Macros seemed pointless. Infrared showed her multiple rapidly cooling heat sources scattered around her. The escape pod had shattered on impact. She looked up and around. In the distance, there was a horizon, and above her, there was sky. There could be no mistaking where she was. She acknowledged the space, then turned her mind away from it. It was all too vast to take in. She thought about moving, but the wind was strong, and she, a memory disk attached to a hollow vacuum suit, was light. Until the storm had blown itself out, she decided to stay put, putting events back together in her mind. As she wiggled her feet a little further into the dust, She noticed that any movement sucked power from the disk's power reserves. Without the light of the sun falling on its solar panels, they could not recharge. She powered down the suit as much as possible, hoping that daylight would bring energy, then fell into the fractured past. Her memories of the fall were chaotic. She teased out fragments and tried to fit them into sets. It was hard to make them cohere. There were the early ones. The caretaker saying, "One pod each. We'll be in touch all the way. Meet up again down there. You'll see." Her hatch closing, locking out danger. The pod's intercom buzzing into life. Cassiel and the caretaker confirmed that they were safe in their own pods. Then Leela replied and was heard. A moment of relief. Then the hatch's round window framed an entity that froze Leela's memory. The pressure door must have caved in. The nanogel had met the sweatheads. They'd merged as a kind of tentacle, reaching out across the room. Limbs emerged from a pulsing mass, moving in a kind of grotesque, coordinated ballet. A dead face, smeared across with purple, pressed itself against the window. It winked at her, then vanished. Fists drummed against the glass, smearing it with nanogel and blood. Leela pushed herself back into the escape pod, ready to go out fighting if this new abomination broke through. "All's good. Just a few seconds to eject. Handing over control to Cassiel." The caretaker's voice. She knew him so well by that name, it was impossible to think of him as Mandala. Was a calm presence on the intercom. A thump, and Leela's pod shifted a little. "Almost," said Cassiel. She sounded completely in control. Then the three of them were away. Leela had the satisfaction of seeing nanogel and pale bodies explode out into the vacuum behind them. The escape pod flew silently, but it had still been full of noise. The suit's servo motors had a tiny mosquito whine. Something seemed to have come loose inside it, bumping and rattling with every movement. Ancient auditory systems created white noise from nothing. Glitches danced in her vision and crackled through her ears. Leela did her best to ignore it all as she craned towards the pod's window, watching stations spin away from her. Emotions shook through her. There was awe and fear, excitement and dismay, optimism and despair. Beyond the smeared glass, unreachably far away, her home shrank down to nothing. Cassiel's voice remained strong, whispering encouragement into her ear. And there was the knowledge she shared too, flight and systems management instructions that showed her how to assess the progress of her small craft and be confident that all its systems were functioning as they should. Station shrank to a bright pinprick of light, indistinguishable from the unreachable stars. Cassiel helped her travel with confidence through the void. Leela found herself profoundly moved by this sudden, unexpected closeness, this communion in darkness. They stayed in touch through the upper atmosphere, as fire roared around their capsules, light blasting in and nearly blinding both of them. The capsules shook violently. "To be expected," said Cassiel, no stress in her voice. "We're following our assigned flight path." All three capsules' gravity management systems kicked in at the same moment. "Moving into a landing program, heading for the upper cloud layer." And the shaking vanished, then the fire. The capsules decelerated fast. Leela felt the suit's cameras recalibrate. There was a dark, black-blue sky. They were falling on the night side. And beneath it a great, flat expanse of cloud, alive with constant flickers of blue and orange light. "Lightning," said Cassiel. "Other weather effects. Nothing to worry about. We'll be through it in a second." Seconds more, and they were within the storm, brilliance dancing all around them. And that brilliance reached out to Leela and suddenly, cruelly, exposed the limits of Cassiel's control over their fall. Memory fragmented. There was a howling at the window. Explosions. A sharp, burning reek. Sudden, random acceleration.
And then the pod was throwing Leela around and she was desperately clinging on to whatever she could. At first, Cassiel's voice was a broken poem running through it all, sometimes appearing to spit out random words, sometimes vanishing entirely.
"You're hit," Leela made out. Then, "Hold it together."
That was the last message she understood. Bursts of static rang out with the rhythms of speech. They too fell away. The capsule plummeted through another cloud layer, and the hurricane snatched it, its vast roar stronger and more brutal than any weapon. Emergency systems howled in pain. There was an agony of tumbling. That was when Leela's consciousness, overwhelmed by the battering roar of it all, shut itself down. Now the storm howled around her again, but for the moment her grip was holding. There was still no sign of her companions. Their absence was a void, colder and emptier than space. Leela had no idea how long the storm would last. She could accomplish nothing until it had blown itself out. Even when almost dormant, the suit still leached energy from the disk. She needed to find a way of using less power. She slowed her mind. The storm accelerated around her. The sun came. Its light dimmed by cloud layers and the dust of the storm. Visibility was limited to a few hundred meters. Leela realized that there was more to the noise than the wind. When it blew from the south, a long, low moaning joined its roar. Leela isolated the deep, sad sound and played it back, listening to it again and again, baffled as to what it could be. She tried not to think of Cassiel, of the storm tossing her end over end through the air until her nanogel body broke and was lost forever. She sent out another call. There was nothing. Perhaps, she thought, I'm the one who didn't make it. At last, power reserves almost exhausted, she let herself sleep. She woke to pale sunlight and silence. She let her mind return to normal speed, then stood up, dusty earth falling away from her. A brief systems check revealed no degradation. The sun had partially recharged the disk's battery. There was still no sign of Cassiel or Mandala. She detached one of the cameras from her shoulder and inspected the suit, checking for any damage. All was intact, except for a broken face mask. And where there should be an empty helmet, a blank white face gazed back at her. Leela gasped. Someone had died in the suit. It still contained their remains. Leela stared at the skull. It was less disturbing than it should have been. She moved the camera around, trying to imagine the face it had once worn. She felt light movements within the suit, other remnants settling and resettling. She found it in herself to smile. When she'd been alive, her flesh had contained a skeleton. After 3 years of death, she'd found herself another body. And this one, too, was built around white bone. For a moment, she wished for the purity of virtual presence. Then she forced herself to accept the situation. She wondered whether she should stay with the few fragments of escape pod that remained, or set off to find Cassiel and Mandala, or even Diodatus and Dita. Her senses reached for geolocation data. There was nothing there, and that, more than anything, finally drove home to her that she was no longer on station. There was nothing in the air but the breeze and dust. She suddenly felt desperately alone. Clouds filled the sky, obscuring the stars that had been her lifetime companions. Faded orange light broke through them in shards, lighting a broad, open plain. To the north, it rose towards hills. To the south, the long S of a dried riverbed carved through it. Beyond, distant hills rose up again, vanishing into a dusty haze. There had been a city here once, an accretion filling the whole wide valley. But it was long gone. Only rubble remained, broken by occasional scribbles gesturing towards order, not quite shattered walls, stumps that had once been buildings, and a few dark, empty lines that might have been roads. Leela imagined great storms coming again and again,
scouring the dead city, leaving only these fragments. The landscape read like a corrupted hard drive, terabytes of coherence overwritten by chaos, until nothing remained to be read. It was all a dry, sepia brown, reminding Leela of the colour the cheap image printouts always faded to after a few months. Apart from the clouds, nothing moved. Leela thought of the lessons she'd endured as a child, the nightmares of a broken earth lost to war machines that, night after night, shook through her mind. There was no trace of that here. She looked around once again, hoping she'd see a rescuer moving in the distance. There was only desolation. Leela remembered the moaning in the storm and looked south again. Maybe 10 kilometers away, beyond the empty river, tumbled rectangular forms lay scattered across the plain. The cameras whirred as she zoomed in on them. They were fallen towers of concrete and steel. Their walls and windows had been ripped away. The howling winds must have played across them, setting the empty structures moaning. They looked newer than the rest of the city, visitors from another, more vital landscape. Perhaps they contained technologies that she could use to find her companions, or even just an energy source that could break her reliance on the cloud-enfeebled sun. Seeing no other options available, she started out across the ruins towards them. The journey took almost a day. Leela had to stop and let the weak sun recharge her many times. Every so often, the city would throw up some remnant of meaning. A pale green sign half emerged from the rubble, bleached by time. Unreadable words surrounded a broken circle with pointed lines leaping off it. It looked like a smiling face. A red metal cylinder lay half collapsed into a broken pavement, a dark slit cut in its face. A dark metal lion snarled at the blank sky, its face half erased by a millennium of storms. There were remnants of a tumbled column nearby, their broken, dirty stone a sharp contrast with her memories of the shining city. She passed deep holes, every one an empty pit. At one point, overwhelmed by loneliness, she talked to the white figure within her. She told it about all she'd found in the pyramid, the fallen mines and the sweatheads, the face of Diodatus, his laser ready to shine out and break station. She talked about Dieter and realized that she was